Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Beta Hill, and this is the D-Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. With her first book, my guest this week has tackled a topic that's rarely put into print. Dug Out of Water, Mum, Dementia and Get Home Life draws on the experience of author Helen Johns and her mother. One thing that always strikes me about people who write books from lived experience is it's a really brave thing to do. And as Helen says at the beginning of the book, I needed to be brave and share my truth.
Yeah. I had no intention of writing a book, although I used to joke for many years saying, I'm going to write a book about this, when I was wrestling with a Delta frame and a wheelchair and a car boot and whatever. But it was a throwaway line. I had no intention. But when I did decide to write the book, I had a choice to make whether I was going to just tell the story of dementia, which in itself was sad, but I felt it would be more authentic to share the real story, which was Mum, dementia and care home life. And it was those three ingredients that are the story.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the one major thing about a book, even putting the subject aside, is that if you write a book, it's got to be readable. You know, it's got to grab the reader and get you in. And having read the first chapter, you're left thinking, what's happening next? And you want to get to the next page. So I think you've achieved that really well in making it a really readable book.
Oh, great. Thank you. That's lovely to hear, because at the start, I was just gathering my notes and getting everything down. But then you're absolutely right. I had to make it into a story. I had to sort of develop some sort of coherence across it. So thank you. Yeah.
And also one other thing that you do admit in there, and I think was very brave to do, is that because you're in that situation, you were doing what you thought was right at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Mum was diagnosed with dementia, it was way back in 2012 that there was even a sort of diagnosis. And I say that very loosely because that was the experience. In fact, I think I only got a full written diagnosis on her death. But never mind, that was our experience. So at the time when there was a diagnosis of dementia, I hadn't a clue. I don't think we'd even, way back then, had a conversation about dementia. And I hadn't put all of the elements together. Yes, Mum had difficulty word finding. Yes, Mum lost things. She'd always lost things. Yes, Mum would say something that was a bit out of place or a bit odd. And then, of course, she started with asking about my dad, who died 11 years previously. So I hadn't joined up all these things until because we were chasing what we thought was delirium caused by a urinary tract infection. So we were trying to abate the delirium, getting antibiotics, and when Mum responded to those and was well, cognitively well, we just breathe a sigh of relief and think, right, okay, we've just got to keep her from getting these water infections. But then when that continued for so long, I took one to the GP, and he was the first person who said, this could be something else. And before those words, and I don't think he even said the words dementia, but I immediately knew what he meant. And it hit me like a truck. I hadn't even considered it, which sounds unbelievable now.
I don't, not really, because, you know, we rely on medical professionals to give us a true diagnosis. And when they can't do that, you know, we look on medical professionals, you know, rightly at times as the experts, don't we? When they can't give us a diagnosis, it must be very frustrating to think what's going on.
Yeah, and that went on for the longest time. And so I oscillated between thinking, because my mum's a psychiatrist at the memory clinic, and again, you would think mum was under the memory clinic, of course you would know, but it was very much a discussion around, you know, mum's forgetful. And so as things progressed, I would ask her psychiatrist from the memory clinic, and they would confirm that if there was any infection in the body, then that would cause delirium. So I was oscillating between, is this a long-term thing? Is it just the water infections? And we went on like that for the longest time. And it really delayed us making any longer-term preparations, which were, caused us to be in a crisis situation ultimately.
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, I think you mentioned in the book that some people, you know, live for 7-8 years or whatever. They live quite comfortably at home. And as a family, I've gone through this. You at least get, you get a time to adjust. And you think mum's going to have to go into care. So we'll look at it logically over a period of time. I mean, you didn't have any of that, did you?
No. Because I hadn't joined all the dots and thought this is where we were heading. But very, very quickly, mum had always been an anxious person. And very quickly, when you added dementia to my anxious mum, the symptoms went out of control. She was very anxious very quickly. 24 hours, she would be ringing us, you know, she'd be saying she needed to go home. She wanted her mum. She wanted to go home. And we ended up with what I call in the book the saddest day, which is when we just could not settle her. We did try for a few months to support mum by, you know, sitting with her in the evenings when there was that sort of sundowning thing happening. But the periods of mum being relatively calm got shorter and shorter and shorter. And she had carers. Carers came in 4 times a day. But as I say, the periods of time that she would be calm would be shorter and shorter until ultimately she was admitted to hospital in an emergency situation. And the professionals quite rightly said she needed to have 24-hour care.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're in June with the D Word podcast. I'm chatting to my guest this week, Helen Johns, author of Dug Out of Water, Mum Dementia and Care Home Life.
During those 10 years, I'd read a lot about the disease. I taught myself about dementia in some respects and then did much more research. I'd read about the disease. I'd read about the symptoms. I'd read about people caring for their loved ones with dementia. But all those stories, the personal stories, were about caring for people at home. and none got past the care home door, and none of them reflected our experience. And that's what I wanted to share, because there are assumptions made about care home life, both in the sort of the layperson's world and also in the care sector, which didn't reflect Mum's experience and certainly didn't reflect my observation. And sometimes, you know, those perceptions, I would say the sort of general public perception, and I included myself in this before diagnosis and before Mum went to live there, was that, you know, it's either caring angels, God's waiting room with the, you know, the chairs all around the perimeter, staring at a TV that no one's watching, or the horrors of the documentaries on TV. And what I wanted to show was that there's actually something that is neither of those, but is equally traumatic and was very traumatic for Mum.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, that's something I do, you know, I don't think people fully look at times and look at it from the perspective of the person that's going into care, and also, you know, their family and their loved ones. And sometimes it's, you know, it's a bit intimidating, isn't it? Because we're kind of brought up to respect authority. If the doctor says take a pill, then that's what we do. If he says that's what wrong we do, that's what we believe. And the same in terms of care settings, that, you know, you may have the mindset, well, these people look at people and look after people every day, so they must be the experts. So it kind of takes something a little bit special to question some of the things that they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I went in with that mindset. When we found a care home, and we found a good care home, we looked past carpets and curtains. We found somewhere that we felt that Mum would feel comfortable in. First of all, the room that was offered was overlooking a large garden. And we were thinking, that's fantastic. Mum loves all things nature, you know, birds, flowers. She would just love it. So we thought this would be great. She can sit and look out into the garden if she wants to. There were communal lounges that looked inviting. And the room, the environment was, to me, looked great. But what sealed the deal for me was that the deputy manager who showed us round, we'd got into a conversation as we were chatting. And she said something in response which really made my ears prick up. And she said, "We never want you to leave here with a heavy heart." And so it made me feel that our concerns about Mum, our worries would all be over. That this was a place who cared not only for the person who lived there, but also about the family as well. So we entered with high hopes that all of our worries from the previous however long of Mum being increasingly anxious would be over. But what we found was that it was a different set of challenges, and ones that I just hadn't anticipated and found quite shocking.
Yeah, I think, you know, you were in the interesting position, I guess, as I was when I went through it at the same time, is that you have the ability to actually stand back and look at things and the way they develop and start to rationalise why certain things are happening. We're obviously in a very busy care sector. That's a really difficult thing for a carer to do.
And it was the oddest of situations, because at first I completely deferred to their knowledge. They were the experts in dementia care. But as I saw some of the interactions or some of the missed opportunities to soothe Mum, I felt that you don't need any particular expertise to see a person's vulnerability and to respond to that vulnerability. I think you need to have a particular personality and a particular compassion about you. And my actions and my reactions were very much driven by Mum's heightened anxiety. And rather than the environment soothing her, it seemed to exacerbate some of the symptoms of dementia. And I was in this strange position of wanting and needing their help, but having to ask very politely for every little thing, because I didn't want to offend. I didn't want to overstep the mark. I didn't know where the mark was to step over or retreat back from. And one of the things I discovered, and I say this in the book, was that my mum would actually, she taught me an awful lot in the years that she lived with dementia and in the care home. She was able to cut through the dementia and tell me exactly what was going on for her feelings-wise. But one day she said to me, "This is a rotten job and I hate it here." And although I knew what she meant, she just wasn't happy in her environment. What it made me reflect was actually being in a care home has many similarities to being in a new job. And I was very deferential, you know, I was about to their superior knowledge, but I realised very quickly that they perhaps didn't have all the answers, and I could see things working for mum that they were missing, or, you know, missed opportunities. And it was very difficult because on the one side, I liked the carers and I certainly didn't want to make any early enemies. But on the other, I was watching my mother in a really heightened state of anxiety. And even those words don't describe how terrifying it was to watch your mother terrified, and how traumatic it was to watch somebody you love so very fearful. I'm hoping I'll say this again, that my mum told me one day she said to me, she said, "This is a rotten job and I don't like it." And although I knew she was talking in the wrong context, I understood, and that I thought there were many similarities. And, you know, within the care home, when we arrived, we had no induction, really. We didn't know how to go on. We didn't know when to step forward or when to step back. We didn't know what was appropriate for us to do. And actually, some of the rules seemed a bit odd to me. And so I understood that mum felt strange. That's where a duck out of water came from. I understood why mum would feel strange, because I was feeling strange. And so because we weren't given a decent, detailed kind of induction or introduction to the home, then I asked questions. So I would ask 5 questions one day, and then I might ask another 5 the next day. But these were all about mum's care. So I found it very odd that there were no opportunities to get the information first off. But when you asked questions, you felt like a bit of a pest. And equally, when I tried to give them information about mum, who I'd been sort of managing her care for the previous however many years, they didn't seem to want to know that, and told me, "Oh, you know, we do our own care plans here." And I knew that, but I wanted to share what I already know about, or what I already knew about mum. And so I found it very difficult, the exchange of information. And what I saw was that we were kind of getting in each other's way, really, by not sharing information. I wasn't invited to give the information, and they didn't give me any of the information I needed. So it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I guess it is. And also there's probably this thing about assumed knowledge, that people in a care setting will assume you know perhaps more than you do. And they will also assume that they're doing the right thing when, maybe they're not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as time progressed and as I learned more about dementia, and I have to say this was all in response to mum, if she had been a happy, contented lady living in that care home, happily stimulated, etc., etc., I would have minded my own business and just visited quite happily. But the more distress I saw, the more it increased, the more I had to learn about dementia, the more I learned about distress behaviour, or at the time they were calling it challenging behaviour, the more I had to learn about meaningful activity. And I could see that there were ways to prevent that. Professionals were telling us there were ways to prevent that. But because it wasn't implemented fully within the home, and again, I talk about this within the book, I could see that mum would never get better unless we change things. She would never be able to cope in this environment unless we change things. So yeah, that led me to be a daughter on a mission.
Yeah, most definitely so. I mean, you mentioned the word meaningful just now. And I think in terms of activity, I mean, do you feel, and I kind of felt this at times, that people produce an activity just to produce an activity and don't really think it through of, you know, how meaningful it is to the people that they expect to take behind it?
Yeah. And way back in 2013, the amount of activity, meaningful or otherwise, was very little. The care home ran a very traditional model whereby, you know, the care staff kind of administered care to the residents. And there were an activity team, but, excuse the pun, they weren't as active as I would have hoped for. So we ended up with this lonely lounge or this scary lounge. So it was lonely whereby nobody spoke. Or the worst alternative was there was one lady who, again, was living with dementia, and she dominated the lounge by shouting at everybody and demanding they sit down and they do this and they do that. And, of course, mum was terrified at this. So as I learned more about meaningful activity, I understood what it actually meant, that it wasn't just about entertainment. So you're right, you know, that Elvis in the lounge with 30 people wasn't really useful. If you've got Elvis in the lounge with 30 people, probably 20 don't like, or 10 don't like Elvis, 10 don't like crowds, and the other 10 are having a good time.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
You're in tune with the D Word podcast and this week's guest, author Helen Johns.
So, when I first arrived, I thought it meant entertainment, but I understood that it was much, much more than that. That, you know, it could include things. The social things are great and, you know, they have their place. But it can be other things. It can be those low-level things that might be just one-to-one or small groups. It could be a walk in the garden. It could be some chair exercise. It could be knitting to get your fingers moving. And so as I learned more and I eventually set up an activity coordinators forum locally and then spent the next 6 or 7 years training activity coordinators and doing that locally and nationally. So it led me from being dissatisfied with what was happening in mum's care home to thinking about how can we improve this here, but how can we improve this locally and then nationally.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I think it all comes down to the importance of knowing the person, doesn't it? I mean, people should not be defined by their diagnosis. And, you know, people have led really interesting lives. There was a great news story I saw on the TV a couple of weeks ago where a former RAF man, who I think he was 100 now, and they took him to an airfield, showed him a Spitfire, which was superb. It's great. And it's just that level of knowledge that you need, isn't it?
Yeah, and two things on that. When I'm working with activity coordinators now, many of them say, oh, I need more ideas, I need more ideas. And the first thing that I do with them on the training that I deliver is, let's just strip this back, first of all, to knowing about the person. Because I can give you 100 ideas, but there'll be absolutely no use if the person that you are caring for isn't interested in that. And I use this example. If I'm in a care home, what people need to know about me is that I love dancing. So that's a meaningful activity for me. But if my husband was in the same care home and we expect him to get dancing, he would be furious. He'd be uncomfortable, to say the least. So it's about knowing what people enjoy or have enjoyed and what is important to them now, and then matching that to their current ability. And the second point I'd like to make on that was that, great, where we have these events where we take a gentleman to see a Spitfire, which is brilliant. That's the kind, you know, a wish list moment. But what I would like to see in many more care homes is the everyday thing, the everyday meaningful activities that can be happening on a wet Wednesday afternoon, but is no less meaningful to each of those individuals. You know, so a lady who's always loved crosswords, doing the crossword. A lady who's always loved knitting, doing the knitting. A gentleman who loves Newcastle United, listening to a podcast or something. So some things that mean something and bring that feeling back for the person.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's absolutely vital. I confirm my opinion would be the same as your husband's, by the way, if somebody asked me to dance. But, you know, give me the Beatles and some football and I'd be happy as anything.
So you're not interested in Vera Lynn and Roll Out the Barrel?
It's not for me. But the other thing, obviously, is designing these activities as people go along their journey as well.
Yes. And one of the things that I do when I'm working with activity coordinators and family members is when we're talking about, first of all, the what is important to somebody, what have they enjoyed doing, but then how can it be adapted as dementia progresses? And there's a particular stage whereby a person who is living with dementia is no longer interested in the activity in its completion. So, you know, it won't be that, you know, my mum used to love art, but she wasn't able to complete her paintings in the same way. But what we were able to do was we were able to find resources that tapped into her feeling. So, and you'll have seen these resources, which are the aqua paints. So the very process of dipping the paintbrush into the water and moving it across the card to release the image, that was what tapped into her long-held love of art and painting. And I discovered that on a day when Mum was very anxious, and I saw her demeanour go from distressed to bliss within seconds. And that was a resource that we used time and time and time again. We bought lots of packs of them to support them. So it's about the adapting.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's the power of the lived experience, isn't it? There is nothing like it. Comes loud and clear in the book. I think your mum will be very proud of what you've achieved. It's A Duck Out of Water, Mum, Dementia and Get Our Home Life. And it's been fascinating, Ellen. Thanks so much for being my guest.
You're welcome.
Many thanks to Helen. The book is called Duck Out of Water, Mum, Dementia and Care Home Life, and it's available from all major online bookstores. Well, that's it for this edition. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.